The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back as we head into hour two. What another great delight to welcome back to the show and in studio Arizona's official state historian, Marshall Trimble. I was talking about you last night, Marshall, and I said, you know what, son of a gun, let me just see if he's available to come in tomorrow. I have questions, and he's got answers. So it is a delight.
I'll make something up if I don't.
Yeah, right. Who would know? Author of tons of books. You can find them all at his website, marshalltrimble.com. Marshall has two L's in it, marshalltrimble.com. He also plays a little guitar from time to time as well.
Yeah, I've got one coming up here for...
You got a concert coming up?
I'm going to do the Lee Greenwood God Bless the USA.
Are you?
At the Cave Creek Cemetery Memorial Day, anyway.
No kidding.
It's that Monday of Memorial Day.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful. Maybe I'll go up for that.
Yeah, it should be a big crowd. They're talking about
Cave Creek.
They're televising it, and this is not in Cave Creek.
Okay,
it's just north of the freeway, a short distance.
Okay,
it's out in the desert there, okay. But. It's a national
cemetery. Oh, I know where you mean. Okay, yeah, good. I do love Cave Creek, though.
Oh, I was just
it have
there.
A good story?
I was just there a couple of days ago.
Is there a good story behind Cave Creek?
I have relatives out there.
And you know?
My folks lived out there, and my brother and sister, sister-in-law.
Yeah, and not too far from there, Dick Van Dyke used to live.
I know. My brother was his veterinarian.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He liked Van Dyke.
He had a studio up there.
A good sense of humor. Yeah, and he had a home up there.
And the old NBC reporter whose name I'm blanking on as well.
Oh,
Hugh Downs.
Yeah, Hugh Downs.
Yeah, or ABC maybe.
And there was another one up there too. It was a years ago, but I can't. His name's. I could get it on multiple choice.
Okay. Well, you may throw it at
he
you.
He was always close the show. Good day. Or something like that.
Paul Harvey.
Hurry. Yeah, Paul Harvey. See, yeah. I told you on a multiple choice. I could.
Paul Harvey, good day. And then he ended up at the Biltmore, I think, for the last part of his life. Speaking of the Biltmore, Marshall Trimble, Nancy Davis Reagan's parents used to live there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Loyal Davis, a physician.
Yeah. Right.
There's a very famous quote of Ronald Reagan's that all who esteem Ronald Reagan love to cite to. And he used variations of it quite often, which is that freedom is a fragile thing and never more than one generation away from extinction. It's not ours by way of inheritance. It must be fought for and taught to our children, lest one day we find ourselves telling our children and our children's children in our sunset years what it was once like to live in America where men were free. He used it in his inaugural when he was governor. He used variations of it. And I hunted down the origin of that quote. The very first time he publicly used it was Phoenix Chamber of Commerce, 1961, when he was in Phoenix in 1961. He had a lot of connections to Phoenix. To your knowledge, was it beyond just because of his family, or at least his wife's family?
I think it was. He did that television show. Oh. Days.
Yeah, Death Valley Days.
Death Valley Days.
Yeah.
And I believe they filmed some of that out at Apache Junction.
Okay.
If I remember right.
Oh, okay. All right.
I was just getting out of college in 1961.
You were just getting out of college. You had already seen your first Johnny Cash concert, though, by then.
Oh, I saw that. In 1956, I think it was, here at Syatt's on Central Avenue.
Syatt's.
It was an open-air dance hall on Central, just below Indian School.
Yeah.
And very few people remember it today, but unless they're just a bunch of geezers like me. They had no air conditioning. And talk about sweating together.
Yeah.
And you go out there, and those girls would dance and sweat, and their blouses were soaking wet.
Yeah.
We were soaking wet.
Yeah.
And but Johnny Cash, and it was really funny. He was just getting started.
Yeah.
And we went. I still love the songs. I did a lot of his songs. I even recorded a couple. How High Is the Water, Mama,
mm-hmm.
and Rock and Roll Ruby,
mm-hmm.
and so those. But he was born just a few miles in Arkansas from where my mother was born.
That's what you were mentioning.
But
that's
she would have been a little older than him,
yeah.
but about 10 years older than him. But and he was a great guy. He was a great man. Very generous.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys who worked with him, he kept a lot of those guys. Something I really admire, because sometimes when your career is on the wane, like Carl Perkins and
yep.
some of those guys,
yep.
he gave them jobs.
Yep.
And the Carter family,
yep.
Mother Maybelle,
yep.
and he really was. He took care of you.
He was an interesting character because he was involved in. You're right, charitable stuff. He actually cut an album. He was very religious. I don't know if people know
that. I've got that album.
Yeah. With Billy Graham.
Songs of the Soil. Oh, no. I'm thinking of the one he did, Songs of the Soil.
Oh, yes. He did
way
that.
Back, way
he,
back.
But
yeah.
he has a song. He has an album that he did with Billy Graham, believe it or not. And he was very involved. He was early involved in a little bit of prison reform, too. You know, his
yeah.
concert at San Quentin.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Folsom Prison
mm-hmm.
was kind of an early iteration of giving the prisoners a little different,
yeah,
a little different from the ordinary.
There's a show streaming right now called June.
Oh, okay.
Have you seen it?
No.
It's
about June Carter.
June Carter. Yeah.
No kidding.
And it is an excellent film, and it talks about Billy Graham
mm-hmm.
and all of that those shows.
Yeah, no, he was a little living a little harder in his earlier days, and then
he did.
Yeah.
And I was really disappointed for a while because I saw him a couple of times when he was bombed out of his mind.
Oh, you did?
And I thought, this is my idol here. I copy him. I learned to play the guitar listening to Johnny Cash records, and I love the guy.
Yeah,
and. I never met him.
Mm-hmm.
I got to know Waylon Jennings
yep.
Because he and I worked in some of the same joints here before
yeah.
he went to Nashville.
Yeah.
But I never got a chance, and I probably blew a couple of chances. Like the one I did with Joe DiMaggio, I choked. I could have gone up and said, hey, I sing How High Is the Water, Mama,
yeah.
too, and my mother was born right in neighboring town. But
you knew Waylon Jennings a little, huh?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We were talking about him. Young David, weren't we just talking about Waylon Jennings the other day?
Yes, and his connection to the Green Gables.
Yeah. Yeah. What was the connection? What was it?
He mentioned it in one of his songs,
oh,
which I believe was recorded live there. I could have that story wrong on that part, but it was Honky Tonk Heroes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Remember the Green Gables
with
the night?
Oh, yeah,
right
yeah.
south of here on 24th.
Yeah.
Yeah. They had a night in the parking lot.
I had a cowboy rancher friend from Springerville.
Yeah.
And he came in there one night, and they'd sold the cows down at Tovery's, and he came in there one night with a couple of other guys, and they had a few drinks at the Green Gables,
yeah.
and then he went out the door, and he jumped on the back of the horseman out there.
Yeah.
He jumped on the back of that horse,
yeah.
and that horse just went ballistic.
Yeah, the horses don't like that.
And he bucked him. He bucked he bucked the guy off in his armor.
Hopefully Gosnell had enough insurance.
He hit the ground clattering with that armor. And this guy's name was Hall, a big family up there, big Mormon family
yeah.
up in Springerville.
Yeah.
And he was persona non grata.
I imagine.
At Green Gables.
I imagine. That was the old Gosnell family.
Yes,
I thought
yes.
that ran it.
Yes.
That did a lot of development.
I knew them
it.
Well.
Yeah.
One of my son's teammates, and I coached one of the Gosnell, Bill Gosnell's little boy.
Oh, how fun.
When he was about 12 years old.
How
so.
Fun.
I've had a varied career.
Is there anyone in Arizona you didn't know? Probably not. Up until about 6 months ago, you didn't
I don't know,
know
anybody
me.
Today.
But you are so storied. I mean, it was so funny. Last time you were here, a few weeks, maybe a month ago, we had just hired a new sales rep. And she said, Marshall Trimble's coming. He was my teacher.
Oh, I remember
you,
that.
You
yeah, yeah.
Him. You must run into him all the time.
I do. And, you know, they're still kids to me.
Yeah, of
they're
course.
Still 18 years old, 17
and
years
still
old.
Their teacher.
And I'm going to a class reunion this Saturday, tomorrow night.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, tomorrow night.
Uh-huh.
Of Coronado High School,
oh,
where
fun.
I taught for several years.
Yeah.
That's where I first got into the history stuff.
Yeah.
I was a jock and a coach.
Yeah.
And so they gave me a history job, and it turns out I didn't care that much for coaching anymore. I got tired of that, but I love the history.
It's an amazing story, especially American history. There's a wonderful letter that oh, gosh, who was the – I'll think of it on the commercial break. Now I'm having a memory moment. But there was a there's a wonderful story about a historian, an American historian who got tired with her craft. And you know what? I'm not going to spoil it. I will get it together over
okay.
the break, and I'll give it to you when we come right back. Marshall
right.
Trimble and I will be right back, and I'm going to look this up. I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Arizona's official state historian, Marshall Trimble, is in studio with me. Delighted to have him. And I was sorry, my memory failed me on the exact nature of the story I wanted to share with you as we went into the break. I had a chance to look it up. About when you get into the study of history, yes, the specifics are so important and the details matter so much, but it's important not to lose the larger picture, too. This is the story I was trying to think of. The great writer, adventurer, and map enthusiast, Bernard DeVoto, had good reason to
write. I've read his books.
We all know Bernard DeVoto.
Across the wide Missouri. And
Yeah. He had good reason to write to his friend Catherine Drinker Bowen, the wonderful historian whose works like Miracle at Philadelphia and Yankee from Olympus made history come to life. She was losing heart, getting discouraged in her history writing craft. And she wrote Bernard DeVoto saying, "How do you stay at it?" And here's what he wrote back. You'll like this, Marshall. "If the mad, impossible voyage of Columbus or Cartier or La Salle or Coronado or John Ledyard is not romantic, if the stars did not dance in the sky when the Constitutional Convention met, if Atlantis has any landscape stranger or the other side of the moon, any lights or colors or shape more unearthly than the customary homespun of Lincoln or the morning coat of Jackson, well, I don't know what romance is. Ours is a story mad with the impossible. It is by chaos out of a dream. It began as dream, and it has continued as dream down to the last headline you read in a newspaper. The simple truth, you can ever write about our history will be charged and surcharged with romanticism." You see the romanticism.
That's
what the great historians do, right?
Yes. See the that gift of words. Mm-hmm. And so many times history is taught. I've sat in on some university history courses, and these professors who should know better
right.
are up there reading,
right.
just reading to you.
Yeah.
And I think I got enough of that when I was in college,
right.
and I never used notes. I had a story to tell.
Yep.
At the end, I did a cowboy poem,
mm-hmm.
and I said, "I don't know how much of this is good. You're going to remember, and it really doesn't matter
mm-hmm.
because you'll have a lot of years before." Before you're gone,
right.
You go on to your great reward, a government job.
Uh-huh.
And this was a Southwest history class and an Arizona history class I was teaching, both one at the college and one at the high school. And I said, if you leave here feeling a good, you do it on your own.
Mm-hmm.
You'll like history. You'll pick up on it wherever you go because it's all around you.
Yeah, that's true enough.
They don't get that today, I don't think.
Well, that is the intellectual crime of our age. One is distortion, and we don't have to get into that right now. I do enough of that on my show for other times. But the other major intellectual crime, particularly with American history, is how boring so many textbooks have made it.
Ooh. Yeah.
That's the crime.
Yeah.
It turns people off
yeah.
when it should turn them on. It's
yeah.
the second greatest story ever told, my old boss Bill Bennett used to say. Yeah.
I used to, when I was taking history classes, I thought, and teaching, I looked, the publishers were in Philadelphia,
yeah.
New York,
right.
or Boston.
Right.
And I thought, I've never been to any of those places. Mm-hmm. Going back to New Mexico was going east for me.
Yeah.
And I thought, these kids, high school kids especially,
mm-hmm.
You can't relate to those things if you you've lived in Arizona all your 15, 16, 17 years of your life.
That's right.
And how do you relate to these stuffy people? Mm-hmm. And how do you relate to writing names and dates on the board mm-hmm. and then saying there'd be a quiz on this on Friday? And I never did it.
Right. No. Not only that, but the way we've kind of made heroes of history boring, too. Mm-hmm. My boss, again, to quote him, he hated the idea that the dollar bill, the most common thing, I guess, in most people's or children's pockets, if they have currency or money anymore, is George Washington. And it's the god-awful most boring picture of George Washington.
Oh, yeah.
And this guy used to be known as the fiercest chieftain in the forest. Well, mm-hmm. what boy, young boy, wants to look at that Gilbert picture, and say, I want to be like that? Get him a picture of George Washington as a chieftain in the forest.
Yeah, get him telling a story.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Or leading in action of some kind.
Right.
He was a great experience in the West, back in the 1760s.
Yeah.
And had some wild times.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they don't – these guys are not humanized.
Right. They're
and
dulled.
Even Lincoln – I would have loved to spend an evening with Thomas Jefferson.
Right.
What was it Kennedy said one time?
Oh, yeah.
Nobel
laureates?
Yeah.
This is the greatest collection of minds ever gathered in the White House with the possible exception of the time Thomas Jefferson dined alone. Yeah, right?
Yeah, I love it.
Right. But that, you don't see too many $2 bills anymore, but that's also a terrible picture mm-hmm. of Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah.
This guy was, he would write and then he'd go on a 5-mile run and then he'd come back. I mean,
I get that question a lot.
Yeah.
And it's because the old frontier people don't either.
Right.
And a lot of that was, they had rotten teeth.
Uh-huh.
And
so they didn't smile for
the dental work was non-existent pretty much for these people. And the other was, you had to hold that smile for a long time, and pretty soon it looks like deer in the headlights.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So, the camera didn't just click it like it does now, and you got it. Because I even notice when I have to take several photos, and I'm grinning, and pretty soon I say, okay, let me work up another grin here.
Yeah. All right, Marshall Trimble, let's bring history to Arizona. One of my favorite pieces of Winston Churchill's writing is from what he wrote in his diary the night Pearl Harbor was bombed. He said, silly people, and there were many, not only in enemy countries, might discount the force of the United States. Some said Americans were soft, others that they would never be united, that they would fool around at a distance, they would never come to grips, they would never stand bloodletting, their democracy and system of recurrent elections would paralyze their war effort. They would be just a vague blur on the horizon to friend or foe. Now we would see the weakness of the numerous but remote, wealthy, and talkative people. But I had studied the American Civil War, fought out to the last desperate inch, and American blood flowed in my veins. Winston Churchill had American blood in his veins, and some of that blood comes from a place in Arizona called Jerome.
Jenny Jerome.
Yeah.
His mother
talk to us about that.
Eugene Jerome was, it was a very rich family, mm-hmm. and they were funding, and they found just a, literally, it was a freak of nature, Cleopatra Hill, mm-hmm. which is the hill that where Jerome sits today. And it set then too, come to think of it. But it was just rich in gold and silver, and especially copper. And so Eugene Jerome was one of the financiers of it. And that was maybe a little known fact to Arizona, but we had to be financed by Eastern money.
Hold that thought.
Hold that thought.
I unfairly did this right before a commercial break. We'll pick up more full-throatedly on the other side of the break.
We'll pick her up.
Speaking of making money, we'll be right back with Marshall Trimble. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Marshall Trimble, Arizona's official state historian, is my guest. The official state balladeer, his dear friend, Dolan Ellis, a regular on this show. That was his song coming in, Who's Gonna Run the Truck Stop mm-hmm. in Tuba City. It's a lot of fun. Marshall, sorry, before the break, you were talking about the Jerome family, and which is
blood related to Winston Churchill.
New York. Yeah, they were.
And
New
you were
York.
Talking about how so much East Coast financing was yeah. part of our. So go ahead, take okay. it any way you want.
And that was part of the feuding went on in some of these mining towns because you had. I don't want to get sidetracked from where we were going, but the mining interest and the business interests were trying to attract capital to develop Arizona because at the time we were short of people and short of everything.
Yeah.
And so we wanted that capital, yeah. and that was part of the problem in Tombstone with the rivalry between the cowboys
yep.
who didn't want anything like that and the people who wanted to bring investment. And Eugene Jerome, he stipulated when he put this cash up that he was going to he wanted the town named Jerome in his family name honor. Well, he never came to Jerome.
No kidding.
One of the most fantastic boom towns of
yeah.
them all.
Yeah.
And Eugene Jerome never visited. And we had that same thing with Judge DeWitt Bisbee.
Uh-huh.
I forget if he San Francisco or uh-huh. or New York, but uh-huh. but he stipulated that Bisbee be named. I'm looking at the Frank Brophy book
yeah,
here.
Yeah, yeah.
That it be named after him, and Bisbee never visited Bisbee either. And that was the most spectacular town between El Paso, New Orleans,
yeah.
between New Orleans and San Francisco.
Yeah.
Bisbee, Arizona, and it still got remnants of that. Beauty that architecture today.
If you take that wonderful train ride out of Jerome, you go to Clark as well, which is
Clarkdale.
Clarkdale, which is the same Clark that the county where Las Vegas sits is named after, Clark
yeah.
County.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that would have been an East Coast family,
yeah.
too. Or
William,
was it
yeah. William Andrews Clark?
Yeah,
and very interesting, secretive type guy.
Uh-huh.
In fact, he sneaked into Jerome
uh-huh.
and realized, and that's when he bought up that this was a two company town.
Yeah,
and Clark came in then the town, but and also Butte, Montana. Clark was up there.
Maybe a senator or
an
office
yeah.
holder
yeah.
there at one point.
He didn't
if I'm
really
not mistaken.
He didn't really dig politics too much. But
uh-huh.
He wanted to be a senator, and,
yeah.
And he got it. And then when he got it, it didn't. You know, he was an. They're all those guys were all interesting characters, but Eugene Jerome had this. And I would have really, I would have loved to have met Jenny Jerome. You know, she had a snake tattooed on her wrist.
No.
Did you know that?
No.
Yeah.
No.
And what in the 1880s and 90s?
Yeah.
What respectable woman would have had a snake tattooed on her arms? I thought this gal would be somebody. And I think because Randolph Churchill was not a very colorful person.
Right.
He was pretty close to the well, whatever.
Straight arrow,
yeah. yeah. And but where did Winston get his personality? I just watched another documentary
yeah.
on him just a couple of nights ago.
Yeah,
and with Stalin and Truman and Roosevelt
yeah.
and all that
yeah.
at the end of the war, but it was interesting that Jenny Jerome, because she was a colorful gal there in New York City, and how she fell in love with Randolph Churchill, I'll never know. But she raised one heck of a son. I think he's one of the greatest people that lived in the 20th century.
The Clark. The there's another story about the Clarks. It's people might know the story of Huguette Clark, who was who inherited all the Clark money and built this huge mansion that she always had staffed but never herself visited, never left in New York after she came here from Paris. I don't know.
Oh.
Yeah, it's called Empty Mansions, which was quite a bestseller a few years ago. I guess a lot of these people just never come to the place.
Well, it was
they're happy where they are. She wanted to live in a hospital.
It was pretty remote. You know, this area was really, yeah. really, in these mining towns especially. You take Bisbee,
yeah.
Tombstone,
yeah.
Jerome, yeah. Morenci, Morenci, Clifton were really remote,
yeah.
and but they were all million-dollar towns, multi-million-dollar
towns.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you about an interesting feud in Arizona, yeah. a family feud. I guess it was like our version of Hatfields and McCoys. Maybe that's unfair.
No, it was more notorious.
All right, good. Well, yeah. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and Marshall Trimble and I will go through it. We'll be right back.
Need another couple of hours.
We'll see what we can do. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Privileged and honored and delighted to have someone I consider not only a teacher but now a new friend, Marshall Trimble, Arizona's official state historian. In this privileged life I've been given, I've gotten to get to know really interesting people, and interesting people tend to know interesting people. I'm not one of them, but I've gotten to know interesting people, and some of them can rub off. Well, I'm waiting for that. The audience is probably waiting for it. But some of them, like Steve Twist and Hugh Holman, they introduced me to you, and I'm just ever grateful for that, that they did, Marshall. Before we get to this this other family feud in Arizona, war in Arizona, you said you wanted to say another thing about Waylon Jennings.
Yeah, when I heard the song, and it just reminded me, when we were in the early 1960s, Waylon started out at a place called Frankie's, 52nd Street and Thomas. Uh-huh. And it's gone now. There's a Circle K or something like that there. But he was so good, he was packing the joint every night. Mm. And he had a couple of guys with him, and in his little band there. And then they moved over to a place called Wild Bill's, and this was in North Scottsdale. And then he was packing the joint there, and then on off nights, we would meet at Dolan's place. Dolan Ellis had a
Tuba City Truck Stop and Country Club.
No, this was before that.
Oh, before that.
Oh, way before that. Oh, okay. Yeah, and it was at the corner of the southeast corner of Scottsdale Road and Camelback.
Okay,
and there's a big building there now, but this was a little place, just a cute, nice little atmospheric little folk joint.
Oh, okay.
And we would come in there on open mic night. And Waylon would show up.
No kidding.
John Denver came there a few times.
Kidding.
And then Waylon, of course. Dolan, of course, was doing. And I was in a little group playing at a place just up the street on Camelback, just north of Camelback on Scottsdale Road.
What, like the Brown Derby or something like
no,
that?
No, it was think about it's gone now.
Okay.
We got raided.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Waylon was there too. Waylon and I were trading off shows, or my group. It was not me.
Yeah.
I was a folk group.
Yeah.
And Waylon with the Whalers, I think they were calling themselves, and they were. We wondered why it was so popular. We thought it was us. But anyway, then after they closed us down. And we went on to other joints around Scottsdale and Phoenix and so forth. But Waylon went down to JD's then. And then from there, it was off to Nashville. But when I first heard him, it was like the first time I heard Johnny Cash. Yeah. I thought, this guy has something different.
Yeah.
He's not like us. He's got talent. Yeah. He's got real talent. And he had the voice and the look.
Yeah.
He had that Johnny Cash look.
Yeah.
And he was a heck of a nice guy. I remember that.
That's just nice to hear.
Really nice guy.
Yeah.
And he would come in there, and he would just bring his guitar,
yeah.
No electric, just a folk guitar, acoustical guitar.
Yeah.
And he'd sit up there. Well, he heard a song one of us did
yeah.
called Four Strong Winds.
Yeah.
And he said, I think he told Dolan, he said, got to have the words to that song.
Yeah.
And he recorded it.
No kidding.
And it had a big hit with Four Strong Winds.
No kidding.
And Waylon probably did the best job than anybody. But it was written by Ian Tyson, who was, you know, one of the great cowboy singers.
Yeah.
And so it was. But anyway, that's
a nice memory. There.
Yeah, it's a good memory because Scottsdale wasn't that big a town.
No.
It pretty much ended at Camelback Road, pretty much, or at least at Shea.
Uh-huh.
It didn't go any further north until you got to Cave Creek.
Yeah.
But it just and everybody just supported everybody else, and then afterwards we would go over to the Sahara.
Yeah,
I don't know if that place is not there anymore.
I remember
either.
The Sahara. Yeah.
Okay. It was just across the street.
Yeah.
And it was just up the.
That's where the Brown Derby was, wasn't it, or nearby? Well, I thought so.
You know, I think
it's
the Brown Derby.
It's all coming together.
The Brown Derby's a name I know,
yeah,
but
yeah, yeah.
I don't.
I think it was at the Sahara Hotel. I thought Maybe not.
Probably was.
Yeah.
Because it was another joint.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Randy Sparks was in there playing for a while.
Oh, okay.
When he had the New Christy Minstrels.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so it was a real popular. But they'd all gather after hours. Then after 1 o'clock,
uh-huh.
when bars closed, and we would go down there and just have coffee uh-huh. and trade stories.
Was it coffee?
And it was really.
Was it really just coffee?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Marshall.
1 o'clock.
Tell me about the Pleasant Valley War, okay. the Tewksbury Graham feud.
They people like to call that a sheep cattle war, and it really there sheep were involved because of the obvious dislike of cattlemen for sheep. Sheep grazed it all the way down right down to the nub, and actually the sheep companies were more as politically powerful in those years, but the cattlemen just had that natural dislike. Well. This really started over something else, and it was the Tewksbury's, a couple of the Tewksbury's and the Grahams were working together for a rancher in the area. He was a big out of town absentee rancher, and these are the kinds that the cowboys disliked,
mm-hmm.
and they were rustling his cows,
mm-hmm.
And he was really trying to figure out a way, and the Tewksbury's were pretty reputable people, and he was in his calculations, which one of these can I get to rat on the other,
mm-hmm.
and get him arrested,
mm-hmm.
and that's what started the feud. And I don't think very many people know that, but I've written quite a bit about it, and that's what started the
1880s, 1890s, somewhere
six,
around.
Seven, but it actually started in the early 1880s.
Okay,
when the Grahams came into the area. They came in from Iowa, I believe it was,
mm-hmm.
They wanted to be ranchers. And the Tewksbury's had been there, and they were half Indian.
Mm.
Their mother
like was Native American Indian. Type.
Yes, yeah. their mm-hmm. mother was an Indian.
Uh-huh.
And but she died,
mm-hmm.
and so their dad picked up the boys, the Tewksbury boys. There were John, Frank, and three boys. There were three boys.
Fred, was there a Fred? I'm not sure. But I'm reading a little bit about it. Holbrook and Globe were the sites of some of these bloody battles, right?
Well,
I mean, that went, I
most,
guess,
mostly
the battles.
Holbrook. Yeah. Holbrook was a cattle town,
okay.
a real wild town.
Mm-hmm.
Give you an idea how wild. It's the only town in America for 30-some years that had that was a county seat. It had no church.
Yeah.
You just say, it had everything but a church and a jail.
Everything but a church.
I love Holbrook. It's right up there. I played high school sports there. Not for them, but...
For your small high school.
My small high school.
Which was so small.
That our driver's education class and our sex education class were both taught in the same car.
That's my man. Marshall Trimble, thanks for coming in. It's so good to see you again, sir.
I love doing these.
Oh, well, we'll have you in once a month if you're up for it. We got to get a dinner together of our posse. We'll round that posse up and
Steve
get
and Hugh again. Yeah,
yeah. It's a lot of fun. God bless you, sir. Have a great weekend.
My pleasure.
You bet. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, portions of which are brought to you by our good friends at Y-Refi. They're based here locally. You can visit them. They're on Chauncey Lane in North Phoenix. If you go, do so. I've been there any number of times. You will get no sales pitch, and you won't be asked to sign a thing. They leave the sales pitch up to me. The sales pitch is this. They offer a secure investment in a collateralized portfolio where you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return, and it's not correlated to the stock market or the Federal Reserve. They invest in you with control and flexibility. You can turn your income on or off. You can compound it, whatever you like. There is no attack on principal if you ever need your money back. There are absolutely no fees, and you, of course, get a monthly statement with no surprises. If you don't visit them in person, check them out at investyrefi.com. It's invest, the letter Y, then refy.com, or call 888-YREFI-24. Young David, we didn't get a chance to ask Marshall about the thing you keep wanting to ask him, so I promise next time he's here, you wanted to talk to him about the architect beetle, didn't you?
Of course. You know. By that time, that house might be knocked down.
Yeah, you're on a campaign to save that house.
I am on a
you?
Campaign to save that house with a bunch of other people, and if you're out there and you're wanting to help save Al Beetle's architecture, Go to SaveHistoricArizona.com and tell the city of Phoenix that you don't want them to knock down that building.
Okay.
That's my story.
All right. Speaking of story, history, Ronald Reagan, some of the stuff we covered with Marshall Trimble. Ronald Reagan was consumed with the importance of history, too. I guess it's kind of a theme of the show a little bit today, isn't it? It's okay for a Friday.
Yeah, that and hot dogs.
That and hot dogs, which we'll do with Rabbi Alush in the next hour. And, of course, your lunch, which we talked about in the previous hour. So, yeah, hot dogs in every hour. Nicely done, David. Why not? That's America. Ronald Reagan, in his farewell address from the White House, that was his big message. He said that there's a great tradition of warnings in presidential farewells. It's 1989. And I've got one that's been on my mind for some time. But oddly enough, it starts with one of the things I'm proudest of in the past 8 years, the resurgence of national pride that we call a new patriotism. This national feeling is good, but it won't count for much and it won't last unless it's grounded in thoughtfulness and knowledge. An informed patriotism is what we want. And are we doing a good enough job teaching our children what America is and what she represents in the long history of the world? Those of us who were over 35 or so years of age grew up in a different America. We were taught directly what it meant to be an American, and we absorbed almost in the air a love of country and an appreciation of its institutions. You didn't get these things from your family. You got them from the neighborhood, from the father down the street who fought in Korea, or the family who lost someone at Anzio, or you could get a sense of patriotism from school. And if all else failed, you get a sense of patriotism from the popular culture. But now, some things have changed, and younger parents aren't sure that an unambivalent appreciation of America is the right thing to teach modern children. Teach it. Teach it. And maybe start with reading the full context of that full speech of his farewell speech from the White House in 1989. I'm Seth Leibson. We'll be right back.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.